You're listening to a CKDU News Collective podcast. For more information, see news.ckdu.ca.
My concerns aren't about the quality of the people they've selected. It has nothing to do with that. It has a lot to do with the parochial way in which they've been selected.
Okay, explain that a bit.
Well, if you were trying to get the best people, not in Eastern Canada or Canada, but in the world to do your work, you would not have advertised it in the way that it was advertised. You would not have written it in the way that the RFP was written. You would probably have had a competition. There are other ways of getting great consulting services, but it would never have been done in the small-minded parochial way in which it was undertaken.
So in terms of advertising, I guess that's basically like HRM has certain requirements for advertising any expression of interest or call for proposals. So, and it's just in the local daily paper. And so you're saying it would have been better, we would have been better served if they had stepped that up a notch?
Well, they advertise in the same way to obtain snow plowing services as they do to obtain the consulting services for a generational building. That doesn't seem right to me. Mm-hmm. The requirements would seem to be quite different, and the way of obtaining those two very different services would seem to me to be very different. If I owned a snowplow, I would read the tender page every day. As an architect, I read the tender page frequently. But if I were an architect working in California, I wouldn't be reading that tender page. And I think this is just kind of ridiculously small-minded thinking on the part of our politicians and bureaucrats.
Mm. Now, aside from the advertising, what parts of the process or what do you think of the process of selecting an architect?
I have written publicly before about the problems with the RFP process. And I think there are two ways of thinking about how my criticisms of the RFP process. The first is a qualitative way. There are better and worse RFPs. So I would concede that it is possible to write a very good RFP, one with which I would have very little dispute. An RFP is a request for a proposal, as you know. One thing that I would be very clear about doing, and that the city has clearly not done, is that I would take price out of the equation entirely. And the city has not done this. They have said that you will do a proposal of services, and you will give us a price. And the price will be part of how we pick the architect. I'm not saying that we should just squander our money. Quite the contrary. I think it could have been expressed that the HRM will pay according to a set rate, the kind of rate that might be recommended by a consultant or by the Nova Scotia Association of Architects or by the Royal Architectural Institute of Canada, or, you know, if you pick somebody and said, this is what we are going to pay. Now we're going to look for quality.
Oh, I see what you mean. Instead of asking people to underbid each other.
And I'm just frightened that the worst firm on that list will come in with the lowest figure and actually get the job because the price was low. Mm-hmm. This is a terrible way to do it.
Right. So you'd like to see price out of the scoring.
Absolutely.
For that RFP.
I'm a huge proponent of architectural competitions. And my association, the NSAA, has spoken, members of its executive have frequently spoken against the very idea of having a competition. Mm-hmm. And yet I think it's one of the smartest things a client group can do. I have been part of winning and losing competition entries, and I understand why people are resentful when they lose, but I've also won competitions. And I think that the client is always very well served by not just listening to and seeing one architect's proposition, but many architects' propositions for their building. Mm-hmm. They immediately become more knowledgeable, more sophisticated, more in tune with what is possible, and become much better clients because of that.
Now, is it not more expensive if you're going to go through a competition process whereby you'd have to, I guess certainly to, if the competition were to be to actually come up with designs and you were to have more than one architect doing that, then that would be a great expenditure for the architectural firm.
Well, there's a yay and a nay to this one. Generally speaking, international competitions of this sort are two-stage competitions. The first stage is asks for very little work, design work, usually a panel or two, and some kind of vague statement about what is intended, and many people from around the world would apply and would enter such a competition. From that, usually 10 or 12 people are selected, and they are shortlisted. And then the second round of the competition is conducted, and depending upon how you write the terms of the competition, sometimes everybody's paid something. Sometimes the winner and a couple of second and honorable mention people are paid. It can be written in many ways. It probably costs a bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on, though, what you think you're buying when you buy a new building. If you were actually looking, there's a wonderful example in Spain, in the small northern industrial town of Bilbao, which 2 decades ago decided that it wanted to increase its profile in the world. And so had an international competition for the new Guggenheim Museum that was going to be built somewhere in Europe. And they were in touch with the Guggenheim Foundation, made arrangements whereby this would happen in Bilbao if certain conditions were met. And one of those conditions was that there'd be an international architectural competition. So Frank Gehry, the famous born in Canada, now an American citizen architect, won the competition, built the spectacular Guggenheim Museum there. And now people fly from around the world to visit Bilbao, this lovely little town in the northern part of Spain. So in this case, the citizens there took this embraced the ideas of art, design, and culture, and took this on in a very serious and proper way, and benefited the town of Bilbao, the city of Bilbao, enormously. Instead, what we've done is we've put an ad in the newspaper, you know, between snow plowing services and a tender for supplying toilet rolls to government offices. I've heard the criticism made about the architects being local or not local.
Mm-hmm.
The competitions can be written in so many ways. Certainly it's very possible to require that the winner of a competition liaise with the local architect. You can even, and often it's done that in a competition, that local architect is selected beforehand and will become a kind of a continuing resource to the winner. So that solves, I think, solves a local problem. The status of the project in somebody's office has been raised too, I think, by Brian McKay Lyons. And Brian, I think, is right in saying that this is going to be a smallish project in somebody's big international office.
Right. The larger the firm, almost the smaller, like our library seems.
Yeah, I understand that. But then I have the big but. But if that competition is an international award winner, something that will draw attention from the worldwide architectural community, it is not a back burner project anymore. It doesn't matter how big it is. It is now front burner. Everyone's going to see it. Mm-hmm. And so it won't be the back burner in somebody's fancy New York or Toronto office.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking to Phil Townsend from HRM, Infrastructure and Asset Management.
Very well.
And he was saying that one of the things that they consider a disadvantage to the design competition is that it's a bit riskier in terms of sometimes they're getting back designs that aren't really fitting in the budget of the building or that are sort of outstripping with the resources that they have to build.
Well, if the terms of the competition are poorly drafted, that can happen. If the people selected to sit in positions of adjudication are ill trained or ill prepared, that can happen. I think it happened at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto, for example. I think a hideous new building, but Maybe that's just my personal opinion. But you know, there's no question that there is some risk, but there's some risk in doing anything. I think, you know, the big risk here is that we've missed a huge opportunity. And I think we've just proved ourselves to be small-minded, at the small-minded cultural backwater that I think some of us have always known the Halifax to be.
Mm-hmm. Christine Macy, the Dean of the Faculty of Architecture, had suggested that one of the ways that we could make sure that design was given a little bit more profile and a little bit more attention in our decisions about public buildings is to have a design review board, or to have some sort of group of professional architects and urban designers that are sort of in the public service to oversee designs that are getting approved when public money is getting spent on buildings and that sort of thing. Do you see that as like an alternative to having competitions, or?
I think that these are actually two ideas that sit, that are mutually exclusive.
That are not mutually?
That are not mutually exclusive.
Right, sorry, they can coexist.
Yes, thank you. There's no reason, in my mind, not to have an architectural competition. And it would be great if there were a design review committee that put a member, for example, on the adjudication board, mm-hmm. or had a commentary to offer in that regard, or I would have no problem with that idea at all. I think it would be a great thing to do. I think in this case, it would be lovely to also have an architectural competition.
Okay. Why do you think that this particular building would have been a good opportunity for a competition like that?
Well, for a bunch of reasons. I think that it is where it's located is going to talk a lot about how we view our cities for the next century. You know, are we really going to have are we really going to just have a city that's dedicated to the automobile, as all of our planners seem to be wanting us to have? Or are we going to have a city where people actually walk and bicycle around? And this is a building that's big enough and influential enough to actually set a trend. There's no question about that. So some part of it is that. Some part of it is the idea that it's an expensive building. I've heard the term generational applied to this building. You know, a small city like Halifax doesn't get to build many projects of this size. So just by definition, it will be an important building. I think the third thing to say, and maybe the part that would interest me as much as any of the other two, would be the idea that it's a chance to really rethink what a library might be in the early part of the 21st century. This would not be the only new library to be built in the world, of course. But it's another chance to reconsider, you know, what a library is. At one time, they were book forts. You know, you kept the peasants away from the manuscripts as best you could. And then someone got the idea that, well, maybe the peasants should be, now that they can read, maybe they should have access to the books, and our public library system evolved around that. Well, now we don't need books in the way that we used to have them. Now we need something else. And, you know, I think of a great building like Bibliothèque Nationale in Montreal, which I think caters in a very interesting, thoughtful, moving way to the new needs of library attendees, and think that we could do something. You know, we could be the next stage in that evolution. We could be the next kind of experiment, or the next version of the 21st century library. Wouldn't that be exciting? They would say, "Oh yes, the Halifax Library." They would be quoting the Halifax Library instead of talking about Bibliothèque Nationale.
Just one more question back to design competitions for just a second. Are you familiar with the Point Pleasant Park project? The design competition they had to redo the park after.
I participated in it.
Oh, really? Okay. So I've heard a few people say cite that design competition, which was privately funded and not an HRM initiative, but managed by HRM. and basically one of the only design competitions that we've had that I can find out about. They've talked about it a bit as maybe not a success, because in the end, what got implemented in the park, or the design that was implemented in the park, was not the result of the competition. Can you speak a bit about that? Was that competition a success, or?
Well,
or how do you judge success of a competition in that case?
My answer is going to be a little bit long-winded. I hope you don't mind this kind of being a bit circuitous, but and part of it is because I have my firm entered the competition, we were not winners.
Right.
And partly because we were really practical and proposed things that could be built and would be built. And it's kind of the downside of any competition is that, you know, when you don't win or aren't shortlisted, you tend to think that something's wrong. I didn't win. Having said that, I recall very clearly one evening attending a meeting at St. Mary's University where Mr. Spatz, who had sponsored this competition, was standing up with Peter Bigelow from the city and a few other people and talking about this competition. And most people in the audience stood up and said something like, "We don't want a competition. We don't need ideas from outside Nova Scotia. We want just leave it alone." So that I believe that message got through to the city.
Right.
I believe that in its ignorance and in its kind of desire not to be wanting to seem to be doing the wrong thing, has essentially done nothing. I know there has been tree replanting, but it hasn't been. It has just been tree replanting, like the sort of thing that any tree planter could do. You know, you could just say, "Here's 100 trees, go plant them today," and they would do. They'd be back in an hour and a half, and they'd say, "Well, we're done."
Mm-hmm.
The ideas of arts and culture that were about Point Pleasant Park, were never seen to me to be in the cards. The city was never behind this competition anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They went along with it in a very half-hearted way. So if the competition is being held by someone who doesn't actually own the property, and it doesn't come with the idea that there's a guarantee that you're going to build something somewhat like what was awarded, and in this case, there was no guarantee even that there was any money to do anything. You know, all of the money. Mr. Spatz was very cordial to Halifax, I thought, in ponying up as much money as he did, but it was enough money to have a competition. It wasn't enough money to do any work.
All right. So part of the competition was not like, well, here's the envelope you'd be working with. In other words,
that's it exactly.
Do something realistic within this amount of money.
There was no financial terms mentioned at all. It was just an open design competition.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people who won had wonderful ideas that frankly, you could never imagine the conservative people of Halifax ever allowing to be built.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting example.
And others of them were, I thought, just kind of out of scale with the needs of the park. It's anyway, it was a lovely park at one time.
Yeah. I mean, you did mention Nova Scotians and Haligonians tend to be a bit on the conservative side. And I wonder if the fact that particular design competition was essentially remaking something that already existed, whereas the Central Library is going to be something brand new on a building on a site that's currently a parking lot. So it's not like when the public are thinking about the competition and thinking about the new design ideas that might be coming down the pike there. I guess it wouldn't have the same nostalgic emotional attachment as Point Pleasant Park would for many people.
I don't think there's any question, although there's the whole question of the war memorial aspects of this. But
right.
That's another issue.
Right, where the new library will also be the memorial as well.
I guess.
Yeah. I see.
So, you know what's going to happen, though? In this, I went online today just to make sure that I would get my facts right. So the four people who are shortlisted are going to make proposals, and somehow or other, somebody, and it's anything but clear to me who that is going to select a firm, and that firm's going to get to do the work. some part of it is it's not a competition in the sense that you and I might understand that any kind of architectural competition. There's a huge amount of work that's being asked to be undertaken. But there's no drawing or design or a concept statement that will be, you know, the Halifax, again, in its pomposity, I think, has decided that it would rather just tell the architect what to do than to seek the advice of the architect. I read the RFP, and a lot of what's being asked sounds pretty good, pretty straightforward. But the very idea that this would be all that would be ever asked or required is just, again, I think, small-minded.
So your concern is that because they're picking a design team as opposed to a design, that maybe what we'll be trying to do is micromanage the design here, or?
Well, that is the intention. That's exactly what is intended. It's hard not to see this as being part of a bigger bureaucratic culture, the culture where people who do things are criticized, but people who never do anything are never criticized. And you hear this about this anecdotally about these people who have done nothing, but after 40 years they get a gold watch and they go away, but nothing has changed in the office. But they were nice people and they didn't upset anyone. And I worry that this isn't an example of that kind of thinking played out big. We don't want to have an international competition because something might go wrong, or it might be an unusual looking building, or we might get something. I think it's just a lack of confidence in our own abilities to pull something off, and a lack of confidence in our own ability to manage something of that sophistication. Instead, we've handed it over to a small group of individuals to administer. They are working largely outside public purview, so you and I aren't going to get to see very much of this stuff going on. Whereas with a competition, especially with a two-phase competition, you and I would get to see a lot of the information. We'd be able to offer our comments, our thoughts, and kind of our preferences in ways that are useful and helpful to City Hall, to the planning people, and to the competition advisors.
All right. Okay, Peter.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for your time.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
See you later.
Take good care.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.